Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome. Welcome to Free State, everybody. Joe, what's it all about? What's it all about? The whole kit and caboodle.
I was on the red line there.
Oh God!
It's extraordinary. You know, the superficial wealth and well-being of Dublin. You know, you go on the Green Line. You know, so you go from sort of
the Green Lewis line.
Yeah, you go from the sort of the centre of Dublin out towards Ranelagh. You know. And you know, it's terribly civilized. There's never any bother. You know, it's just a sweet and well manicured and prosperous feel.
Yeah,
you know, it's very multicultural. A lot of Americans, a lot of students from all around the world. You know, all the accountants, the KPMG. Then, but to see the real divide, you go on the red line. You know, so I take the red line if I'm coming to Houston Station or if I'm going out to the forecourts. You get the red line from Middle Abbey Street. Fuck, like it is like a field hospital in Vietnam. Yeah. There was a woman, and like it's you see the poverty. You know, you see, you know, the heroin addicts. You know, the people trembling, gaunt. You know, unkempt, unwell. It's very, very striking. Anybody who wants to see the two sides of Dublin, just get on the Green Line and then get out at Middle Abbey Street and take the Red Line. There was a woman, and really it's like the Serengeti plane, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. The woman, you know, and I'm just, you know, this was the sound, right? Oh, and she goes, oh, Jesus Christ, I'd, yeah, I'm fucking standing there, you know, sit down. Oh, it's like a sort of, you know, it's like the opening scene of a Steven Spielberg movie about the dinosaur island, you know. And then, as I got on, I sort of knocked against a fellow with the, you know, very gaunt fellow in tracksuit, you know, knocked against him with my backpack, you know, with all the recording equipment on it, you know, it's right and heavy. Me fucking hand. And I went, oh, I'm so sorry. You're fucking sorry, fuck hand. She's like, oh, Jesus Christ, you know. No, there's two charmers, right? And they've got their Alsatian dog on. You're not supposed to have a dog shop.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry about that.
He's got the Alsatian dog, right? And they're drinking cider. So they're drinking, like, tins of cider. And the dog is becoming very, very excited, you know. Because they're pouring cider on the floor of the Lewis, and the dog's lapping it up furiously. And they're like, they're having a laugh. Then they don't, they pretend to pour it and they don't pour it. So the dog starts into their, and they've got a child with them about 3 years of age who starts to cry. Stop, stop, stop. Fucking, you're standing there like, oh my God. And yeah. Like, oh Jesus Christ.
No, it's an experience. Whatever. Yeah.
And it's you know, but it's just an illustration of what a lot of people don't see every day as the reality, you know, the grinding poverty, the drug addiction, that's a big part of people's lives. But
I was at Croke Park on Saturday night. Another step.
I am amazed. Another step in your rehabilitation towards Irishness.
Ignore that. You know, we can be Irish any way we want. That's the beauty.
Yeah, not true. English, though. Not English, Irish.
No, that's not true.
We'll come to that.
We went to... it was a lovely, lovely evening. It was one of the parents from my son's school decided to get everyone together and bring all the dads and sons to Croke Park, and we all went out. And it was lovely. Good game. A good friend of mine did, you know, we're talking about the divide in the city. A good friend of mine texted me when it was being arranged saying, what match is on? And I'd looked it up and I said, Dublin are playing Monaghan. He said, oh, he said, I just Googled rugby matches at Croke Park.
It's a different, it's like there's your green line, red line analogy.
I know.
And Monaghan can scamper. Electrifying forwards. The Dubs far too defensive. I mean, again, All Ireland final last year, and I was talking to Maurice O'Callaghan, Conn's father, and his mum. You know, he's the most elegant lady and played hockey at a very high level.
Cooler people.
Yeah. And they were on the peace walk on Saturday, okay, the Gaza peace walk to the Doyle. And I was making the point to him, like, Dublin have the best front six in the country. I mean, they are electric. And yet, when they played Kerry 2019, you know, because of this sentimental, you know, this psychological sort of landmine in their brains, they still see Kerry through the prism of the great golden years team. And, you know, the torture that Kerry put them through for 30 years, you know.
Yeah.
The Bomber Liston's famous joke, you know, on the morning of the 2011 final, when Dublin finally made the breakthrough and people didn't think they would. He said, oh no, he said, the last time, he says, Dublin beat Kerry in Croke Park, Elvis was still alive. You know, and that was part of the thing. And so 2019, they have to go to a replay, you know, to beat a team they're demonstrably better than. And then last year, could easily have lost it, you know. And again, just won it at the death on a day when David Clifford wasn't at his, you know, extraordinary best. So, you know, they're too conservative, they're too defensive.
But they're also,
you could see that in the Monaghan game.
But you could even see, like, to the...
Monaghan were much more adventurous.
Untrained eye, like, it's not even... It's not just conservative, but this sense of taking no risks, even how you attempt to score. So, like, you saw that in the first half when they were through on goal, it was about five, you know, and they waited and waited and passed and got too close to the goal before they tried to score a goal. It kind of, again, it shows this over coaching, this over emphasis on, you know, you must
caution.
There are certain principles you must obey.
Caution and formula, and, you know, going through each player's stats afterwards. Mm. Like, you give the ball away here. Why did you give that ball away? You know, I mean, you know, surely that could have been recycled and moved backwards. You know, moved to the side, and, you know, Desi's personality isn't a sort of a personality that's designed to create an adventurous impulse in young men. You know, oh, you know, I mean, I think we played well today. You know, the players are going through, you know, the work that was set out for them. You know, and the system, I think we're relatively happy with. Obviously, we'd look at some of the individual performance.
You've been listening to Free State. Thanks for listening.
And that sense of vibrancy. I mean, when Conor O'Callaghan first came into the Dublin team, I mean, his first two acts, the All-Ireland semi-final and the All-Ireland final, were to take a ball 40 metres out, slalom through two highly rated blanket defences and score brilliant solo goals. We can't do that if he's not given the licence to do it, and if he's not given the ball at the last minute. And, you know, again, that was something that when Pat Gilroy came in last year as the water boy, they changed, you know, because they needed to change it. I mean, they had become a dull, formulaic group, and dull, formulaic teams don't win All Irelands. And I was invited by Dan Lambert, you know, the CEO of Bohemians.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also the manager of Kneecap, who I didn't really know anything about, but I was invited to a private screening of their film.
Were you? Before we Kneecap. Go on with that. There's something I wanted to come back to on the sporting front, but we'll talk about it again.
Come back to that first then, because we'll do it, you know, because I think that, having seen the film, I mean, I don't want to ascribe too much importance to them. You know, this is not, you know, the great literary revival. You know, it's not Yeats, and it's not, you know, the great historians or great dramatists. You know? But I think that it's something that's important nonetheless. But anyway,
I wanted to talk, because it's just an interesting thing when we talk about sport and you talk about that risk-free, and you talk about, like, you know, a lot of things that you've talked about in this podcast about what it's about, and that's why I was asking what's it all about when we began, because I've been thinking about Jurgen Klopp this weekend. Oh. You know, I know you actually do secretly like Jurgen Klopp.
Well, he's interested in glory. He wants them to play. He wants them to push themselves. You know, he doesn't want them to play conservatively.
And one of the great moments that...
He wants them to gallop. He wants them to be a vibrant
atmosphere. But one of the great
moments
that defines that is when they knocked Barcelona out of the Champions League when they were 3-0 down after the first leg. And the winning goal, they were getting ready for their corner. And Barcelona were getting ready to defend the corner that they expect to be defending. And the players are coming forward to attack the corner they expect to be attacking. And everyone will have drills, and they'll have routines, and they'll have signals and all this kind of stuff. And in a moment, and you can tell, and this only happens if you feel that freedom. In a moment, Trent Alexander-Arnold sees that if he just quickly takes the corner, Divock Origi is unmarked and they can score. And he takes the corner. And every time you watch it, it's incredible, because the Barcelona players start appealing to the referee. They're like, you know, this is wrong. Give us a free kick. But that sense of adventure only comes from a manager. And yet this week, when he announced that he was leaving Liverpool, you know, there's this kind of sense of shock, but also that feeling that he says, you know, I have to do this now before it's too late. I have to live my life because I've given everything. I can't keep giving everything and losing every other aspect of my life. And I was reading this weekend about, you know, he's got a grandson that he doesn't see, who lives in Germany. All these other things that are important in life.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right. Like, it's very difficult not to be cynical about anything that professionals say. From Jordan Henderson to Klopp to Mourinho, you know, they're extremely self-serving. They're always looking to the market, the next opportunity. But Klopp does have a sense of joy, very obviously, around the game, and a sense of joy in his players. Now, obviously, he's a very clever, ruthless man as well, as we've seen with the way that he has designed this template for the team to play in. But you're right. And, you know, in the end, what is the point of sport? I mean, I've watched 3 games today on TG4. And really, the only thing worth watching was Dara Canavan, you know, Peter Canavan's son.
Mm.
Because you just think to yourself, this is, you know, because he's an anarchist, all great sportsmen should be. Yeah. Anarchist, throw the script out. Let's see what you've got. You know, and I will show you what I can do, brother. I will show you what I can do. And you find yourself watching him, you know, laughing. He's the reincarnation of his dad. I don't think that there'll ever be a player, you know, like Peter Canavan again. That vast excitement, you know, that players like himself, James McCartan Jr. brought with them, where you, as soon as they got the ball or when the ball was coming near them, you were thinking, you could feel your heart beating, even with your team. You're like, oh Jesus, here we go. This is going to be good. You know, and there was that sense about Liverpool at their sort of galloping best. And, you know, these unrehearsed moments, you know, some of the great goals that great Tyrone team scored in the noughties, some of the things that they did. You know, Stephen O'Neill on the corner flag, turning the defender inside out and then kicking it over with his right foot. And then doing exactly the same on the opposite side of the pitch. You know, so that you would think that the match should be stopped. He should take the acclaim of the crowd for a few minutes. You know, a standing ovation just to say, I am glad that I was here to see this. Maradona taking the ball in the World Cup final. Or in the World Cup semi-final against England.
Quarter-final. Yeah.
And he's got the ball. You know, he's sort of the other side of midfield. And, you know, he can let off. He can do the wee touch off. Everything's safe. And all of a sudden, he just embarks on this thing, you know, that seems impossible when it starts. It's not planned. You know, he just decides he's going to have a go. And, you know, the noise in the stadium gets louder and louder. And when the ball goes into the net, it's like a feeling of seeing a miracle. Mm. It's just like, and even better, it was against the Brits. But, you know, this magic, that's what you remember.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what's wrong with Gaelic football now. You know, you go to watch the Dubs now, and 9 times out of 10, it's just what we saw last night against Monaghan. You know, fucking play, lads. You're going to be an old man soon enough. You're going to be retired soon enough, doing some fucking job that you probably hate. You know, your life will become humdrum. This is your release. And I think that was Klopp's legacy. And it takes us.
But it takes us.
To another group of lads who certainly aren't leaving anything behind. Anyway, so I'll paint the picture. Kneecap. So Dan Lambert said, oh, look, I'd love you to come, you know, get your views on this, you know. You know, I like Dan very much. And so I said, oh, fuck's sake, okay, look, I'll go, you know. So myself and the glamorous brunette went down to the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield. It's the world's most comfortable cinema.
Mm.
Those chairs are made for sleeping. And I could immediately feel, oh my God, I'm going to just have a little...
Do you fall asleep in the cinema often?
If it's
at all possible.
But no, it wouldn't be possible with kneecap. I mean...
I'll fall asleep in the cinema to anything. You know
the old Kit Kat ad, you know, you look awful, you can't sing, you can't dance, you can't play music, you go a long way. And, I mean, they can't sing, they can't dance... The plot is, let's say, unplotted. They curse and swear and fuck the Brits and chucky arla. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a strong Trainspotting vibe, you know, so the Orange Lodge chases them, you know, up the middle of the village. The dissident Republicans chase them. The RUC chase them. There's a lot of chase scenes, you know, where they're running, you know, it's like boom, 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 boom. Fuck the Brits, Chucky Arla. There's a lot of Chucky Arla. It flies along, you know, it lasts an hour and 45 minutes, but it flies along. They have sex now. It's almost subliminal, you know, cut into the middle of a heavy drug-taking scene. They have sex with sort of multiple cute Protestants. right? It's always Protestants,
right?
Because they make that clear. They're only interested in the Protestant girls.
Okay.
Because this is part of the sort of the conquest. You know, they're freeing Ireland by having sex with Protestant girls. I think that's the message. And then maybe that's too joicy, and maybe that's too. So I'm reading too much into it. Maybe they're just screwing Protestant girls because they're gamer. Can I just apologize for what I just said and take that back? It was demeaning and sexist and sectarian, and I just want to apologize to the listeners for that. But so that's what happens. They have sex with a lot of cute Protestants, and then when he orgasms, right? Because there is a good looking boy, like he is a proper good looking boy. He shouts, you know, in the throes of passion as he orgasms in these really tumultuous sex scenes, you know, like tumultuous, you know, with the heavy hip hop going and all that there. He shouts like, Junkie Arla! Or Bradside! Or Fuck the Queen! And it's very... It's and then some of the Protestant girls, the Protestant girls generally don't like it. You know, they get angry, and you know, he says Brits out to one of them, and then she just immediately jumps up from her position and starts to slap him across the face. He jumps out the window. I don't know why he jumped out the window, but there's a lot of that. Then, in the middle of this, they stick in Michael Fassbender.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard to sort of pin down why he is there. He certainly gives it a bit of gravitas. But he glowers like the baddie in Star Wars. You know, he wears a sort of a hood. And he, in an early scene, two of the boys are wearing wee cowboy outfits. And Michael, the idea is that he's a senior IRA man. And he's telling the boys, you know, when you watch your next Western movie, watch it from the perspective of the Indians. Always, always watch it from that perspective, not from the colonists' perspective. And it reminded me, you know, when my father was in Longkish, my mother dressed us up in the cowboy outfits at Christmas time, because it was this time when we were all, you know, into the cowboys. So she dressed the three of us up in the cowboy outfits. And we went up to Longkish, you know, no size, and we had to walk through the cordon of, you know, the soldiers got into the camp, you know. And anyway, Fassbender fakes his own death, or does he, in the middle of all this, because he's on the run. He jumps off a yacht backwards into the sea.
Right.
Disappears. And then turns up 10 years later as a yoga instructor in what looked like Coney Island, you know, off the northeast. He shoots three dissidents and then he hands himself into the police. Like, it's all, you know, and I mean, the glamorous brunette thought it was very engaging. You know, like, it was all very higgledy-piggledy and, you know, but it was a very good promo for the Irish language.
Well, and it won the audience award at Sundance.
Yeah, and of course, you see, they're experts at mayhem. I mean, they don't care less. I mean, Ian Paisley Jr., who delightfully call Ian Oak, right? I'm sure he was saying, those wee fuckers, fucking call me Ian Oak again, right? All right, tell me what to Liam Oak, oh, jeez, we go. So anyway, as you know, they're the sort of, you know, it's not just a good promotion, a very good promotion for the Irish language, you know, and they will make a fortune. You know, they're taking America by storm. They're game as pheasants. And as a friend of mine said, truly, they do not give a fuck. But that's all part of the, like, they are the natural heir now, the modern hip-hop replacement for the Wolf Tones, now that the Wolf Tones are retired, you know, except that the Wolf Tones don't shout, I love your hairy gee in Irish, you know, or I want to lick your, I can't even say it, which are the sorts of things, you know, that are shouted. I listen, some of their music is showcased. You know, they don't even have an album yet. They haven't even released
really?
They don't even have an album. But You know, and they do things like that. They throw darts at a picture of Margaret Thatcher. Excellent. They make a living as drug dealers, and then you see what happened was the unionists found out that that they'd got 1.6 million in lottery and and film funding, and then of course the whole unionist outrage machine.
The Daily Mail: why does the BBC give them fawning national coverage where they were hailed as being at the forefront of Irish hip hop? Now, you know,
above the headline, Kate waves from hospital bed. I only wish I had an ounce of her courage.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think, you know, the Daily Mail's concerned.
What do you call Prince King Charles's wife?
Camilla.
Yeah, yeah. And there was another piece in the Daily Mail about that, saying, you know, that Camilla spent two whole hours at her king's bedside today.
You get a lot of
and waved.
You do keep up to date with this story. You do realize it's a bit like me reading the Ryan Tuberty diary every Sunday. I can't. It's my appointment reading. Ryan Tuberty's diary.
Oh God!
You know,
do you actually?
It's magic.
Did I ever tell you the one about, you know, the Prince Charles's drive? It was the prince in, not the king, but he's driving into, can't remember, I don't know if it was Frankie Boyle who told this, I can't remember who told the joke, but anyway, Prince Charles is driving into Buckingham Palace in his Range Rover. See, and as he drives through the gates, you know, the electronic gates open, you know, and the boys are there, you know, with the big hats and all. And he hears a bump as he goes through, you know. Just sort of on the offside wing, gets out, comes round, and to his horror, there is the Queen's beloved corgi of all her corgis, her favourite corgi, lying on his back, legs in the air, panting his last, blood streaming from his mouth. And he goes, "Oh my God, oh my God." And he goes down, you see, and he fiddles about with the dog, he tries to sort of, he doesn't know what to do. And he says, "Oh God, someone please help me. You see, and the next thing, bing. Stop me if you've heard this one.
No, go on.
Wee Jeannie appears.
Yeah.
Jeannie goes, "All right, look, I was just, you're in luck here, mate. I was just going past." I'm Jeannie from West Belfast. "I was just going past here, mate. And, you know, you seem like a decent guy. You've never asked for anything." He said, you seem to be in a lot of pain. So please, can you help me?" He says, "Look, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is really irregular because I've used up my quota for the week. I'm going to give you a wish, any wish at all." Prince Charles said, Could you save my mother's prize corgi?" You see, and then Jeannie goes over and he pokes about the lifeless body of the corgi, you see, for a minute or two, and then he goes back and he says, "Look, she's too far gone." He says, "Look, I'm sorry about this, mate. There's nothing I can do about that. You know, I would have been, see, if I was here a minute earlier, I could have done." He said, "Look, I'm going to do something I've never done before. I wasn't able to do that. It's not like me. I'm going to give you another wish. Prince Charles says to him, he says, sir, do you think you could make my fiance, she then was, do you think you could make my fiance beautiful? And he goes, have you got a photograph of her? He takes out his wallet, shows her the photograph. The genie looks at the photograph and he goes, give me another look at that corgi.
That's, you know, you need to apologise for that, Joe.
I want to apologise for that. It was sexist.
You're very sorry, aren't you?
Yes, I am. It was sexist. Yeah. That it was cruel.
Beneath you.
Yes, for our queen, to say that about our queen.
Yeah, yeah. Or for anyone, really.
And the, but the kneecap thing, I mean, I think there's a couple of things about it. You know, you've got that exuberance, that confidence of young nationalist people in the north now. There's a lot of young people who will not be interested in this stuff, but it's anarchic, it's brash, it's saying, you know, why should we be ashamed of the communities we come from? Why should we be ashamed of the resistance movement that we came out of? Why should we be ashamed of the Provos? Like, one of them's called DJ Provy. He's a Derry City man from the Craigan. They're all fluent Irish speakers, very confident lads. And, you know, like one of their songs is get your Brits out.
Mm.
You know, and they sort of shout this, you know, while they're doing their hip hop. And that is very vibrant. And that's how it's seen by young people in the north. I mean, my son went to one of their gigs there. He thought it was terrific. I mean, it wouldn't be for me, like.
Yeah.
But he thought it was terrific. He was vibrant, confident. And also he thought, he's a fluent Irish speaker, my son. I mean, all my kids are all Irish speakers. They're all very interested in it. You know, their aunt Kate is a very eminent Irish speaker, you know, and spent a lot of time with them. They've all been to the Gaeltacht, they've all done that, you know. And you can see their sense of identity. You know, they're happy with, you know, they've no hang-ups, sexuality, all those things. You know, they're very confident. You know, in fact, he went to the kneecap gig with a Protestant friend of his. Right.
Would they ever play cricket?
And, oh no, they wouldn't. But I mean, the cricket, that's a different thing. I have no problem with cricket. And so you've got this thing, you know, because we see this, you know, for example, in Israel at the moment, that Hamas are terrorists, you know. I mean, Gideon Levi said, look, best way to look at what happened on the 7th of October, it's a slave revolt. This isn't oppressed. People are resistance fighters. Right, results are horrifying. That's what resistance fighters do, and this is the consequence of horrific oppression. You know, I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen such a prolonged, disgusting oppression of people as what's happening out there. But the and, you know, the Western media, because you've got that whole colonial thing going on. We'll come back to all of that. You know, the UK, the horror at anybody saying anything good about the IRA and casting, you know, the SAS and the British Army as the terrorists. You know, the RUC, the stuff that they did, you know, assassinating hundreds of Catholics, you know, using covert operatives, you know, supplying arms to loyalist paramilitaries, all that that's starting to come out now. And these guys aren't, the thing about them is they're not putting a tooth in it. They're not diplomatically describing it the way we would, for example. They're saying, fuck the Brits, you know, up the fucking Provos, you know, in the context of a struggle that's over.
Yeah.
You know, and young people saying, well, we're not afraid to celebrate that, because these are the people who stood by us, you know, when we had nothing else, when we had no votes, we had no houses, all the rest of it. And like, they do a lot of it. And I suppose in a way, it's a bridge from the past into the present. You know, they moon to the crowd. You know, one of them's got Brits Out tattooed on his scrawny arse. The crowd goes mad, you know. They have a lot of fun with the dissidents. They ridicule them. I mean, they think the dissidents are ridiculous, which is another feature of Northern life now. Nobody supports the dissidents, you know. People shun them. So they've got, you know, they've got an association called Radical Republicans Against Drugs. And they're cornered by one of this sort of Radical Republicans Against Drug cell. And the guy says, how do you even fucking pronounce that? And the guy goes, Rad. He says, you sound as if you've got a stammer. And I think young people will find it absolutely riotous, but probably the most important part, you know, of what it is, like, it's not much of a film, you know, it's like a very good production values, very good soundtrack. You know, it skips along very quickly. It's sort of, as I described to you, it's zany, a lot of chasing about, a lot of, you know, cursing, a lot of sex, a lot of drugs. Bit of a mishmash. But probably the most important part of it is their celebration of their traditions, for better or for worse, what they came out of, that resistance movement. But more importantly, the Irish language, the fact that they're all fluent Irish speakers. And one of the themes, and they pick up on, you know, they show a lot of documentary footage of the, you know, which shows the onslaught on the Irish language, the refusal for many, many years to reverse the ban on Irish in the courts and things like that. And it's the antidote to Belfast, you know, Kenneth Branagh's sugary version of a city that only ever existed in his lovey imagination.
I've lost my bus pass. It's jocks and off, he's locking some pins, man. A Kylo fucking free Jinish, man. Keep it at the fucker, fucking fucker.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.